The land by the Marcus's mare has witnessed everything. Long before human habitation, massive glaciers sculpted this terrain, leaving behind polished rock surfaces and deep striations that would become the foundation for a cherished property. The retreat of ice created the clear lake, surrounded by distinctive blue clay, a geological signature unique to this region. This land holds memories far deeper than human recollection, storing information in successive layers like pages in an ancient book. When characters dig into this earth to plant trees or bury treasures, they join countless others who have marked these soils, inserting themselves into an ongoing historical record that will continue long after they're gone. Against this backdrop of geological time that makes human existence seem both precious and fleeting, Jenny Erpenbeck's visitation unfolds, transforming a single lakeside property into a microcosm of 20th century German history. While owners come and go, political systems rise and fall, and war tears across the landscape, the gardener remains. This mysterious figure exists outside of time, known only by his function, as if he has no identity beyond his relationship with the land. No one knows his origins, perhaps he was always there. His routines follow nature's unchanging patterns, watering twice daily in summer, pruning withered blooms, harvesting walnuts in fall, preparing firewood from fallen branches. When potato beetles invade in 1938, he patiently plucks them from plants. When fruit trees succumb to fungal infection, he adapts accordingly. Visitation reveals how humans claim land as their own, only to be displaced by historical forces. The wealthy farmer's family represents traditional ownership through inheritance since 1650. Yet this claim falters when Clara inherits the woods, then succumbs to mental illness and suicide. For Ludwig, a Jewish cloth manufacturer, ownership is violently disrupted when his family flees Nazi Germany. His parents sell their property at half value before being killed. Their assets are seized while Ludwig rebuilds in Cape Town. Legal documents offer no protection when law becomes an instrument of persecution. Even the architect who benefits from this system faces displacement when political winds shift. Given a choice between imprisonment or exile, he leaves for West Berlin, reflecting, "All his life he converted money into something tangible, but now ownership had become a trap rather than security." The gardener accommodates each new owner while maintaining the place's essential character. His relationship with the land transcends ownership. Doris, a 12-year-old Jewish girl hiding in Warsaw, represents one of the novel's most devastating portraits. Her persecution progressed gradually, first sent to Berlin to escape anti-Semitic teasing, then to Warsaw's ghetto as emigration plans failed. Now confined in darkness, she clings to memories of sailing with her grandfather and climbing pine trees with her uncle. Her suffering deepens through her ignorance of outside events. While she hides, her family's possessions in Guben are being auctioned to German families. Her mental refuge remains Uncle Ludwig's lakeside property, the one place she can still imagine unchanged, though this too has been seized. The Red Army officer embodies another face of historical trauma. Having enlisted at 15 after Germans murdered his family, he's already a major despite his youth. He found his 4-year-old sister in their well while his parents and older sister burned in their house. His violent encounter with the architect's wife reflects the complex intertwining of personal and political violence during the war's end. In Visitation, time follows its own peculiar logic, circling back, collapsing, and sometimes stopping altogether. The elderly visitor observes that time flattens as she ages, with past events appearing as preludes to what followed. In old age, everything exists simultaneously. Memory serves dual roles. For Doris, hiding in Warsaw, lakeside memories offer escape from unbearable reality. While for the illegitimate owner, memory becomes a beautiful prison as her beautiful childhood had begun to outstrip her. The childhood friend reflects that childhood creates an indissoluble bond stronger than any promise, a second primeval era forming adulthood's foundation. This geological metaphor connects human memory to the novel's opening description of glacial forces, suggesting our earliest experiences form life's bedrock. Objects throughout the novel act as memory repositories: buried porcelain and silver, the architect's wife's balcony, the writer's typewriter. When unearthed or destroyed, their owners' histories transform as well. Against historical upheaval, humans create meaning through rituals. Wedding customs for wealthy farmers' daughters attempt to ensure prosperity. A bride must not sew her own wedding dress lest she sow sorrow into the marriage. Such traditions create an illusion of control in an unpredictable world. Death rituals provide structure to grief. Elaborate folk traditions are meticulously observed, stopping clocks at the moment of death, covering mirrors. These practices connect individual losses to communal experience, placing personal grief within a larger framework. Throughout human dramas, nature maintains its steady rhythms. When Russians arrive, their horses turn the garden to mud, devouring forsythia blossoms, young fir shoots, lilac, and hazelnut buds. Yet after they depart, the gardener resumes work, pruning damaged shrubs, hoping they might bud again. Within two seasons, nature erases most traces of destruction. The lake serves as a constant presence, a silent witness to generations. It functions as a repository for treasures and recreation, but also danger. When Clara walks into the lake in winter, her body is later found entangled in pine roots. Nature simply incorporates her final act into its ongoing processes. The novel's final demolition scenes deliver its most powerful statement on ownership. The house that sheltered so many lives is systematically dismantled, requiring 17 truckloads to remove the debris. When finished, the empty property looks smaller, briefly resembling the landscape itself once more, until a new house rises. The demolition follows ritualistic principles, with fixtures sorted by material type while minimizing vibrations. This methodical dismantling mirrors the careful construction that preceded it, completing a cycle of creation and destruction. The novel reminds us that even the lake is temporary. Like all lakes, it was destined to eventually fill in completely. This expanded time frame places human dramas in perspective, suggesting our most profound tragedies are merely momentary ripples on the surface of deep time. In a world of disappearances, stories remain our strongest defense against erasure. Visitation creates a literary monument to those displaced by history, connecting diverse lives to a single piece of land. The writer character questions whether creating this half-world of selective memories was a mistake. The novel's kaleidoscopic structure mirrors how human memory and historical records function. Through poetic prose, it demonstrates literature's capacity to resist erasure, preserving not just facts, but capturing the texture of lived experience, hopes, fears, loves, and losses. Ultimately, the land remembers what people forget. While individual lives are temporary, our stories can transcend time, creating connections across generations. Like glacial markings on ancient rock, narratives leave impressions that outlast us, becoming part of the landscape itself.